And it's the Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.
With Anton in for Pat. In an information ecosystem where anything can be generated by AI, it's easy for public figures to claim that something real is fake. It's a phenomenon known as the liar's dividend. Today we delve into this concept with Dr. Eileen Colotti, who is Assistant Professor at DCU School of Communications. Morning, Eileen.
Good morning.
So the liar's dividend is what?
Well, it's a concept that tries to explain how lying benefits the liar. And that's not because people believe their specific lies, but because people begin to doubt all information. So, for example, if you think of politicians like Boris Johnson, Donald Trump or Vladimir Putin, many of their lies are absurd and they're very easily disproven. But what they do is they create a culture of constant lying, and the consequence is that people just begin to distrust everything. And then it becomes much harder for a politician or a journalist who is telling the truth to convince the public that they are telling the truth.
Is there any way to counter that happening?
Well, it's very difficult because a lot of the work that goes into, say, debunking disinformation can lead people to be more concerned. And we see this now with AI. People are very concerned about, you know, can I tell what's real or fake on the internet? In DCU, we run an annual survey on online news. And when Irish people are asked about their concerns, like between 60 and 70% say they're concerned about what is real and what is fake. Now, that's great because it means there's lots of public awareness around disinformation. But if they're not able to decide what is true then or who to trust, then it becomes a big problem and it benefits the liars.
Presumably one of the other factors that has a major influence is that people all want to believe that they seek objective truth, but we tend to be hardwired to find things that fit with our preconceived notions and our preconceived ideologies.
True, and all of us have biases. I think it's important to think of them on a scale, though. Often with things like disinformation and deepfakes, we tend to think of it as a problem that other people have, that we're fine, but other people are very susceptible, or that it's all or nothing. When in reality, all of us have topics that interest us more, that we're more invested in, or we just have biases and politicians and parties that we just don't like. And some of that is totally fine. It's just about being aware ourselves. It's very different, though, if you're in an online environment and there's just an awful lot of fake content or just extremely biased content being thrown at you that you didn't seek out.
And of course, the algorithms for most social media tend to do exactly that. They will find the content that you very much didn't seek out and that often most aggravates you and that confirms your preconceived bias.
Exactly. And this is the huge issue around online regulation, because it's fair to say that regulation of digital technology has been massively lacking. And this goes right back to the 1990s, when in Europe and the US, policymakers decided that they wanted online business to flourish. And the way to do that was to have minimal regulation. And now we're dealing with the consequences of that, which is basically that a handful of companies were able to dominate or colonize the internet, and using business practices that are highly dubious. And one of those is just recommending content to you, regardless of whether you sought it out or not. And often content that is maybe quite extreme or very emotive and has no regard for whether it's true or false.
And of course, many of those platforms, I mean, if you take the Elon Musk, the owner of Twitter, as a case in point, they actively target the media that used to be credible to people and that used to be able to have enough heft to give objective reporting. There is a constant desire and aim to undermine that.
Yeah, and Elon Musk gets all the attention because he sticks his head higher above the parapet than anyone else. But I mean, all of the platforms are quite similar in that part of what allowed them to grow in the first place was using news content and content from professional media, which the same thing is playing out now with AI. A lot of the AI companies rely heavily on content that was created by professionals. And now that there's an issue, they're just turning their back on news media altogether. So platforms like Meta say they no longer will be promoting news content. So they kind of piggybacked or took this content, and now they're turning their back on the people who might actually give us decent information.
How do you get all that back into the bottle? Because whatever about Europe doing it, ultimately, I imagine it's difficult for the EU to do it without American support, and it is already being positioned as a freedom of speech issue in America. And I would figure politicians have to be very wary of coming heavy in regulation.
Yeah, and Europe is often presented as being to the forefront of it. But I mean, it's worth understanding that some of the legislation that's coming in Europe now, like the rhetoric sounds great, we're cracking down on big tech. A lot of it's actually just very basic stuff. It's saying, how should platforms deal with illegal content? How should platforms respond when they're found to be harming children? What are the rules for political advertising? That stuff is so basic. Like, you're on a radio station, you have basic rules that you have to follow, and everyone accepts that. Why are there these bunch of online platforms that don't have any rules? So sometimes I think the free speech argument kind of misunderstands the level of or the lack of regulation that's there to begin with. It's actually very basic stuff. And what the EU approach is overall is not about pieces of content, but it's about the whole system. Platforms are expected to demonstrate that they are not causing harm. And if they are, what are they doing to rectify it? It's not really a free speech issue.
Although what a lot of the platforms will argue is that community participation, the wiki approach to regulation, allows it to be self-controlling, that the system itself, if you put out false information, well, the community will discover it and declare it, and that's the problem solved.
Well, of course, yeah, they prefer a self-regulation approach, as any company would typically argue for. But things like the community notes are often quite effective, but they're also just liable to be hijacked. I mean, you saw this with things like, say, Google search, where people can hijack Google search to start promoting really dubious content. So those types of mechanisms are not, you know, they're not good enough when these platforms have such an enormous influence of our lives.
What about
one of the interesting?
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say one of the interesting things happening in the US, and I guess a lot depends on the next presidential election, is that they're actually looking at the economics of platforms. Because what most of us deal with every day is pieces of content. That's what we tend to talk about. But it's really the economics behind it is the issue. And so the US is looking at competition law and antitrust law. And how is it that you just have a small group of platforms that got to this power? And what business models are they using?
You gave the comparison earlier on about the way, for instance, a radio station has to behave versus an online publisher. And of course, one of the differences is for most traditional mainstream, as it's now called, media, people have bylines. You know who is presenting programs. You know who is writing articles. What about anonymity in social media and whether or not that should be allowed to continue?
Yeah, this is one people have debated for a very long time. And a lot of studies into this suggest that anonymity is actually beneficial in many ways. If you think about, say, a young person who might have an issue, I don't know, with drug addiction or might be looking up something about they're homosexual or something, and they're looking up information, they ought to be able to do those things and participate in discussions without having their identity revealed. Or another example that's often given are people in domestic violence situations. So anonymity has a lot of positives at the level of like interacting online. The company doesn't necessarily have anonymity, so people can be tracked. And if you think of the last European football finals, where there was this awful trolling of the black English players, Twitter afterwards said that most of the abuse did not come from accounts that were anonymous. So it's one of those things that we think of would be very impactful, but the evidence isn't quite there.
Even with the prevalence of bots?
Well, then the issue is the bots. So what we want to root out are the bots rather than people being able to post under pseudonyms or not show their picture. Like forcing people to use their real name or forcing people to use their picture can also cause harms in other areas.
Are you worried about the phase that we're entering into with the combination of AI and social media?
Yes, because as I was saying, the EU regulation, what it's doing now is so basic. It's stuff that should have been done decades ago, and we're only getting to that now. And then we have this huge deepfake AI revolution happening at the same time. And the companies that are leading that are the same companies that were allowed to grow and become enormously powerful. So I think we're in a very difficult area where it's not clear how this is going to play out in the next few years.
Eileen, thanks very much. That's Dr. Eileen Colotti, Assistant Professor at the DCU School of Communications.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.